My name is Jeremy, and this is Good Beer Matters.
I've seen more and more people talking within the beer industry and beer fans talking about mental health. I had these two sort of professional careers, and I could bring those together. Beer is a really convivial drink. We like coming together to drink together. Beer lovers like being around beer lovers, and maybe we can look after each other a little bit more as well.
We can travel nearly anywhere to have a pint with locals, but there's one place we often find ourselves, a place where no one else can go. This episode is about the experience we have in our mind and the state of our mental health within the context of beer. We find great experiences at the intersection of craft and culture. These are the stories of us, of great food and the beer that brings it all together. For the craft and culture of beer, this is episode 142 of Good Beer Matters with beer writer and mental health advocate, Emma Inch. Well, welcome back to the Good Beer Matters podcast. In this episode, you know, for anyone who's been listening, we know that we've been basically virtually traveling around the world trying to understand the culture on the ground of how it's different to drink a beer, to enjoy a beer in a different place with a different culture, a different setting. And in all reality, today is no different. However, we are going to talk a little bit about the beer in this particular beer culture, but we're going to dive into a different aspect of this as well. And I've been looking forward to this for a very, very, very long time. We're going to dive into the culture of the mind, if you will, and cue the Twilight Zone music, but it's not that culture of the mind. There's a topic of mental health in any industry, just by itself is enough. And with world events being what they are, it's a very prominent thing to discuss. But today we're going to talk about mental health, the culture of mental health within the beer culture. And so my next guest, Emma Inch, all the way from England, thank you so much for coming onto the podcast.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, it's... And the reason why I brought you on, of course, anyone who's been paying attention to beer writing, particularly in England, I was a member for a short time, admittedly, with the British Guild of Beer Writers, and you were the chair at that time. So people within the industry may already know who you are, but suddenly you released a podcast about mental health within beer. And just completely captivated my attention in that regard. And that's just the teaser trailer. Will you please properly introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your background within the beer world?
So I'm a beer writer, audio maker. I've been writing and making audio about beer for about just over 10 years, I think. So I started with a radio show on local community radio here in Brighton, which is on the south coast of the UK.
I know it very well.
You know it. Oh, brilliant. Yeah.
Well, my father is from Guildford. And when I was 11, okay. I stepped foot on the sand in Brighton, and it was fantastic.
Fantastic. So we've actually got some sunshine here today, whereas the rest of the country is under a storm. But Brighton, yeah, sunny seaside resort on the south coast of the UK, not far from London. And I started on a community radio station doing a beer show, and moved from that into podcasting, joined the British Guild of Beer Writers, which you mentioned, and started writing a lot more. And so now I kind of, balance that, all those kind of things. So I do a bit of talking about beer, a bit of writing about beer, a bit of recording other people talking about beer. And generally do that kind of stuff for fun, which is great. And as you say, I was chair of the British Guild of Beer Writers for a couple of years as well. Yeah.
But you spend a lot of time with beer, a lot of quality time with beer. I mean, we're not talking keg stands. We're talking quality time with the artistry of beer and how it, but as a writer, you can't just say, oh, this beer is good, you should try it. You're diving into, you know, what does it all mean? You know?
Yeah.
And that's the joy of being a writer is we get to look beyond the beer.
Absolutely. And the same as you do on your podcast as well. Yeah, it's never sort of In fact, yeah, sort of the writing that I find the least fulfilling, I suppose, is telling people how a beer might taste and whether they might like it or not.
Yes.
And also because I think people taste different things in different beers because of sort of this cultural significance of anything that we put in our mouth, any food and drink. We all have a different history that brings us to that. So yes, that I find the least fulfilling, but exploring stories around beer is what I enjoy the most.
You know, it's funny you say that, because I love that there are people out there doing beer reviews, and I love that there are people out there reading or watching these beer reviews, but that is definitely not my lane. I don't want to be disrespectful, but I will be direct. I do not care about beer reviews. I spend a lot of time with beer. Anyone who knows that I know my beer, but who am I to tell you what you should like?
Yeah, you know? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We can only say what we ourselves liked. And you know, it's so situational as well, isn't it? I might enjoy a beer on a beach in Southern Europe that I wouldn't enjoy in the cold, rainy, you know, London or something. You know, there's all different beers that you might, you know. It's all so personal, isn't it?
Yeah,
so contextual. So
absolutely, it's a time and place. Like the beer that I wouldn't be caught, I wouldn't be caught taking a picture with. Yeah. You know, sitting on the sunny beach in Brighton might just be perfect.
Absolutely, absolutely, and also you know, being a beer geek like I am, you know, I enjoy beers that the majority of the world probably don't, and who am I to say? You know, that beer that 80, 85%, 90% of you all drink, there's something wrong with it. You know, there obviously isn't. You enjoy it. It's what makes you happy at the end of the day. You know, it's a little bit of sunshine in the evening.
Well, because on any given day, a person like yourself or myself could start with a light international lager and end up with a goose.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's all fair game. But anyway, so you know, speaking to all the beer geeks, a lot of our homebrew culture in the U.S. came from England. A lot of our favorite dominant beer style in the world, the IPA, originated in England. Anyone who cares about beer had better care about English beer, because there's so much history wrapped into the craft beer boom that America gets credit for. Didn't start with America. Let's be completely honest. We just twisted, you know, changed this and changed that, and like, hey, look what we did. But all of you Brits are thinking, right.
Well, I think you sort of turned the dial up on quite a few things, didn't you? And then handed it back to us. Look what we've done. Yeah.
Yes. We Americanized it. We love big everything. Just that's America. But that being said, there's just been this wave of craft beer that's been circling the globe, and everyone's kind of putting their hands on it. And at this point, all that beer that originated in England is coming back around with a different twist on it. And so now we're calling it a craft beer in England. And you guys are like, that looks familiar. What's happening on the ground now within beer in England, actually in the UK in general, but I mean, you're in England, so I'm going to say England. What's happening now as things have changed?
So I think yeah, you're right. The sort of big craft beer changes happened in the US, came back to the UK. I think we used to be a few years behind you, probably about 10 years ago. We were kind of a few years behind you in terms of styles, or in terms of, you know, ramping things up a bit, as I say, making, you know, in terms of craft beer availability or number of people brewing or number of people drinking. I think we're definitely caught up. You know, we may follow you a little bit in terms of styles. We'll see something in the States and a little bit, you know, a few weeks later someone will have brewed something like that. So I think we've definitely caught up in terms of timing, is my perspective. But having said that, when I went to this, I have some family in South Florida, and when I went there Easter time this year, I was really struck by the availability of good beer across the board, kind of thing. In supermarkets, there seem to be way more good beer and good local breweries in supermarkets than I would say we generally have here. We do have some craft beer in supermarkets, but it's not always a big range, and it's not always local. And I was also struck by, yeah, being able to, you know, most places where we went to eat had, you know, had some kind of bit, whether, you know, Cigar City, I suppose, wasn't far away. And so you could, that was kind of widely available. And it was kind of, you know, wherever we went, you know, a little sort of cafe or restaurant or a museum or, you know, this, that or the other seemed to have, you know, a decent choice of beer, which I'm not sure is always the case here. I think that's getting better. When I say a decent choice, I don't mean that the beers that are generally there are not good, as we've just said. I mean, that they may be produced locally, maybe they're a more interesting style, that kind of thing. That's kind of what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
So it felt like the availability was more. In terms of what's happening, we had the big wave of the, you know, the bitter styles, which I love. I love bitter beer. I love things that, you know, basically suck my cheeks out, you know, in terms of bitterness. I want that in a beer. So we had all that. I was very happy about that. That wave sort of passed. And we've now, of course, got all the New England styles. My impression in the UK, and this is my perspective, as someone who loves bitter styles, is sometimes it feels like there's a lot of breweries. And you can go out to a bar and there'll be, you know, 15 taps or 20 taps, whatever you like, behind the server that you can choose from. And sometimes it feels like, despite that, there's not much choice because it can be New England IPA, followed by New England IPA, followed by Hazy Pale, followed by Juicy Hazy Pale, followed by New England IPA. And it feels like for somebody who wants a bit more choice, you know, where are the brown ales? Where are the porters? Where are, you know, there are a few sours around, but that tends to be kettle soured or kind of pastry sours. Mm-hmm. Ooh, gives me a judder just thinking about it.
Because those are quick and easy to make. There's a quick turnaround. We can make some money on these kettle
sours. People like them. And that's great. You know, that's great. If that's your thing, there's nothing wrong with it. But often I'll look at a bar list and I'll think, there's not really much here that I want. And I may do something that I wouldn't have done, you know, 10 years ago. I'll get the Pilsner then. Thanks. You know, and I don't engage with those. I think also the difference with the States as well that I noticed, and again, this is just my one particular, you know, couple of weeks that I spent there. The ABV of beers, you know, craft beers seemed higher than it tends to be here. And I think that's definitely going to have more of an effect. There's been some new tax regulations brought in the summer here, which is pushing down the ABV of beers again. So, you know, a 4% juicy pale doesn't hold a great deal of interest for me in terms of it doesn't seem to have a backbone or a structure or the interest that maybe something, yeah, with a bit more bitterness or slightly higher alcohol content or something like that might have in terms of taste profile. So, yeah, that's kind of where we are. Obviously, the breweries have taken a hit with COVID, like worldwide, and also taken a hit with the energy costs. Out of control in this country, really, for small businesses. They've had massive rises in their electricity and gas costs. Plus, we have a cost of living crisis. You know, we're not in a great place financially in this country, which also I noticed when I came to the States how little my pound was worth against the dollar. So, so it's quite tricky. I think it's a challenging place for breweries at the moment. I haven't seen there have been some that have failed and folded in the past year or so. Not as many as I thought they would be, but that is no consolation to those people whose, you know, life's work has kind of gone, really. And so, there's been some sad losses, but not as many as I thought there'd be. But who knows? These things take time to kind of work their way out, don't they? So potentially we'll see more losses in the future.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's my little potted guide. Somebody else would have an entirely different potted guide, but from my perspective here today, that's where I think.
Well, in your discourse on being IPA heavy wherever you go, particularly hazy heavy, which, you know, frankly, I think that's great. It's a great new entry point into craft beer for people who are and that's fantastic. Yeah. But anytime I talk to a beer nerd or beer professional, they're good, but I'm so over it. Where are the browns? Where are the ambers? Where are the porters? And So yeah. I completely agree with you. Yeah. But you kind of bring something up that I find interesting, particularly in just the vast history of beer in England and mm-hmm. the rest of UK. I don't want to leave out Wales and Scotland and Ireland, but mm-hmm. But you know, I'm just going to say England. The vast history and the sense of tradition. Mm-hmm. You know, like American tradition goes back hundreds of years, English tradition goes back thousands of years. So it's different. It's mm-hmm. a different scale and scope. But I think about it like a game of tug of war, or a game of cricket, or something like that, where you've got the traditional on one side and innovation on the other side. Mm-hmm. Who's winning that match right now?
Hey there, it's me, Jeremy again. I forgot to mention that I also have a podcast with my dear friend, the incredible Julia Herz. Together, we've created the Sense of Beer Style podcast. It's the essential training for those who want to lead in food and beverage. We've created prepisodes to cover foundational beer knowledge, as well as Stylecast to walk you through each category of the 2021 BJCP Beer Style Guidelines. If you work with beer as part of your job, then subscribe and listen so you can become an authority. Go to senseofbeerstyle.com to subscribe.
Oh, that's a hard one to say. And I guess where it plays out is around something that I didn't mention when I first started speaking, cask ale. So cask conditioned ale, which obviously is an almost uniquely British thing. You know, where we serve, you know, have the beer has a secondary fermentation in the barrel, is served without additional pressure. You know, that's got such a heritage, and those of us who love it are so very, very proud of it. It has taken a hit. Obviously, over COVID, it was impossible at times to drink cask ale because you can only drink it in the pub. It's not something you can have at home. You know, mm-hmm. you can't have that store unless you have a very advanced home bar set up with a cellar and everything.
There might be one or two people.
There might be one or two people who do that. But yeah, so obviously it was very difficult then for cask ale producers. And for cask ale lovers. And I think there was sort of, you know, perhaps a slight boost when we all went back to the pub and we were like, oh God, please, I don't want a can of anything. I don't want anything fizzy. I want a pint of cask ale, good, well-conditioned cask ale. But I think in that kind of arena, there is a bit of a battleground. There's this idea that some people find it old, boring, fusty, something that you know, old men in flat caps drink. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, then there's this other sort of tussle of people saying, no, you know, this is an amazing drink. This is something living and beautiful and interesting and can be very, very flavoursome and, you know, can speak of where it's brewed, probably on a very small scale in a very kind of often a very sort of craft way, just the very nature of the beer. It shows the skill of the publican as well as of the brewer. And so I think there is kind of a battleground there of how to encourage people to choose cask ale and to celebrate its heritage whilst also, enabling people to see it as something contemporary and relevant to their lives, I suppose.
Well, and it seems to me it's definitely prevalent here in the US. It seems that it may actually be prevalent everywhere, but just the idea of each generation doesn't want to drink their mom's or their dad's drink. They want their own drink.
Yeah.
Is that, to put it over, to be oversimplified, is that basically what's happening to cask? Because that's my dad's beer.
Yeah, I think it's complex. I think it is complex. I think probably that is partly to do with it. Young people may not see it as relevant. It's also not as eye-catching on the bar quite often because the pumps by their very nature are quite low to the bar. The hand pumps like that sit right on the bar rather than, you know, the keg, big keg fonts in front of you can look a lot more attractive. I think initially there was a lot of disquiet among some more traditional cask drinkers that they sort of created this, not they, but a sort of a divide was kind of created, an artificial divide in my mind between cask ale and craft ale. So people, you know, this kind of thing, oh, that's not cask ale, that's craft. And so I think because most of the new sort of craft ale, what we were calling craft ale, came in kegs. So people sort of felt that they were two different things. So to try and kind of bring that back together, well, cask is the original craft ale. You know, it's crafted
I was going to say that was the original craft for hundreds of years.
Exactly.
So you and your dry hopped little fandangled thing.
Exactly. You know,
welcome to the party. We've been here a long time.
So I think sort of those things didn't help. And Camera, the campaign for real ale, now embraces all types of beer. But I think there was some resistance for a while in doing that. They just wanted to embrace just cask ale for a while, or some people, some members, and some people around Camera. But now it kind of represents all beer. But I think there is that kind of how can we make people like this? I don't know if that's a weird phrase to say, isn't it? How can we show people this, and so that they might they might give it a taste and see whether they like it?
Yeah it's that's a hard thing, because you know, to force people to like you will drink this, you know, type of thing. That sounds like college hazing, and that's not really the point. I mean, if you're gonna drink something under duress, then God help us all. But beer, and in particular cask ale, that's something that's just poetry in a glass. That's something that, frankly, that is not for entry level drinkers, because what they're looking for, beers that shout their stories, right? Mm. And cask ale whispers poetry. And so if you're not ready for cask ale, then, you know, that's fine. It'll be there for you. Hopefully it'll be there for you when you're ready. But that is something that, that when you, and this is just my experience, this is just me talking my absolute adoration for a cask ale, but it's something that it benefits from a mature palate, I would say.
Yeah, maybe you're right. Yeah. And I suppose the only worry is at the moment is whether it will still be there. I think it's been hard again since COVID. Some pubs have either stopped serving it or reduced the number of taps that they would have it on, so therefore reducing the choice, so therefore it not being as attractive, and also getting into this sort of vicious cycle of it has to go through the pumps within sort of 3 days really max, and find some pubs finding they'll put a barrel on and it won't go through in that time, they won't sell enough in that time, and then some, you know, less good pubs will continue to sell it after it's past its best, and then people will one day think, oh, I'll give that a try, I've heard about this cask ale thing, and they'll try something that's awful and rotten and tastes like balsamic vinegar, but not in a good way. Yeah. And and then they won't drink it again. Yeah. And so it's really hard. And then breweries not able to make the profit that they can from other types of beer when they're selling cask. And it's a lot of work to do it well and to do it justice. It's a difficult one. There's a lot of work going on in the UK around that at the moment, and there's a lot of people, thinking about how we can at least showcase this beer and, you know, present it as a modern alternative rather than, like something that your granddad or your dad used to drink. Yeah.
Yeah. But thank God for cycles. It will come back around. But when I teach people about beer and just give like the overview of beer around the world, granted, I've got a little bit more time to explain myself, but for the sake of this podcast, if I were to succinctly describe the major craft culture, the beer cultures of the world in a single word, I would describe America as bold. I would describe Belgium as creative. I would describe Germany as refined. But I would describe UK and England as subtle in the best way possible. What's your response to that? And how would you describe British UK beer compared to the rest of the world?
That's really interesting. And, you know, obviously part of me would like to claim all those words for British beer. And I think in pockets of the industry, all those things exist. Creativity, boldness.
Agreed.
Yeah. I think, yeah, probably. Yeah, I guess when you're looking at, cask ale, often the flavors are subtle. The flavors of, say, English hops traditionally have been very subtle compared to New World hops, although that's changing. And there are, there's a lot of research going on in terms of hops. And there are some new British hops that have big, bold flavors that are almost replicating some of those sort of New World hop flavors, which is great. It's really exciting. But yeah, I think that's, I think you've got a point probably in terms of the subtlety and the, I suppose even with the sort of craft beer revolution sort of thing. It felt very big to me, but for the rest of the country, it's probably a little tiny blip like that. Mm-hmm. It was quite subtle, and the kinds of people who were drinking the beers probably, not bold and brash necessarily. Although, as I say, you can find that across the industry. So, yeah, I think that's interesting. And I think sometimes maybe we're subtle as well in this country in that we don't celebrate our beer culture and the fact that exactly, well, like cask ale is one example, but, that the styles of beer that we've given to the world kind of thing, we don't often celebrate that as a culture, even though sort of, I think it's still something like 8 out of 10 drinks served in every single pub, 8 out of 10 alcoholic drinks, served in every pub is still beer. Some sort of statistic like that, but perhaps we sort of take it for granted a little bit. Maybe it is a little bit too subtle. Yeah.
Mm. Well, and I think along with subtle, it comes the confidence. And this is where I flesh it out, it comes to the confidence of you all have been brewing beer for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years. You know what you're doing. So you don't have to, Hey, look at me with all those brash, bold New World hop flavors and I don't mean to sound disparaging or pejorative to any culture. We have our own strengths and our own beer superpowers. But I think that my experience with British beer is what makes me love it so much is it doesn't poke you in the eyeballs. It gives your palate a warm embrace as it passes by. That to me, that's British beer. But within the context of beer, within the context of British beer, the other big topic that I really wanted to chat about with you is the idea of mental health. And you've recently started a podcast about that within the context of beer. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So before I was involved in beer, I've always loved beer. I've always drunk beer, but I've always written as well. But before I sort of brought the two together, I worked for a long time in mental health as a mental health practitioner. So in frontline mental health for about 20 years. At the end of my career, I was a psychiatric social worker. I worked directly in mental health for a long time, and I'm still involved in academia to some extent around mental health. So it's always been something that's interested me, as has beer. And I think sometimes those two kind of sides, at times I thought these two things are quite different things. But particularly over the past few years, I've seen more and more people talking within the beer industry and beer fans talking about mental health. And either acknowledging their own struggles in terms of mental health or acknowledging the need to do something about mental health within the industry. And I suppose coupled with that, the sort of the growth in moderation around alcohol consumption, which, is big here. Lots of people report that they're moderating the alcohol consumption. I think something like 1 in 3 visits to a pub is now alcohol free. We're talking about a sort of a big thing. And I suppose a lot of that is people being more willing to acknowledge the links between alcohol and their own mental health as well. So there's kind of these different kind of strands flying about,
yeah,
whilst also on the other side recognizing this, the importance of places like the pub, particularly in British culture,
right,
for you know, for support, you know, for being somewhere you can meet friends, where you can be engaged in your community, and also the power of those places to support their own communities as well. A good pub will also support the community around it. So those kind of things kind of started milling around quite a lot in my head. And so I decided to produce this podcast called Same Again, which I think has a number of different meanings, really, kind of on different levels. I think that kind of works in terms of both mental health and drinking. And to look at that intersection between beer and pubs and mental health, from the way that anxiety and from the way that alcohol can, for example, make anxiety worse, to the way that pubs can also support our well-being generally, and also, as I say, the good work that some pubs and some breweries are doing around mental health. So to kind of bring all those things in together, and it's the first series is 6 parts, and it's a documentary style podcast. So rather than
very well produced,
rather than sort of one-to-one interviews, I've kind of created stories within each episode, and I'm mm-hmm. kind of narrating it. I have a resident psychiatrist on each episode, Dr. Graham Campbell, who helps us understand kind of what is anxiety, for example, or what is stigma, or, you know, what are the issues around whatever topic we're concentrating on. And then various people from within the industry and outside of the industry have shared their stories around their own mental health journeys, and then highlighting some of these areas of good practice as well. So, yeah.
Well, I mean this somewhat tongue in cheek, but I've had conversations with a few different people, and mm-hmm. in regards to mental health, you know, we say that sometimes beer or alcohol is the cause, but it's also equal parts the cure as well. Mm-hmm. And you kind of started to allude to that. If you wouldn't mind, let's talk to each of those. You know, how does alcohol affect us in the beer industry in negative ways? And then conversely, how does it solve those problems?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think probably those of us who love beer, and perhaps those of us who've experienced any form of mental distress, anxiety or mm-hmm. or depression, or even something that we all experience like grief or loss, I think we've probably all noticed sometimes that alcohol can make those things a bit worse. Mm-hmm. It can, you know, it can make us feel worse about ourselves. It can make us maybe do things that we don't want to do if we're drinking to excess.
Yeah.
Dr. Graham Campbell on the first episode of the podcast explains very clearly some of the and first and second episodes of the podcast, some of these sort of physiological things that are happening in our brains when we drink alcohol. That can, you know, cause us to feel worse. But I think also within the industry, there's this pressure on us to drink. There's a lot of events. There's a lot of late nights. There's a lot of celebrating things. And of course, it is something that we love. You know, you wouldn't work in particularly in craft beer. You're not in it for money, really. You're in it because you love this product and you love.
Lamentably, yes, about. That's correct.
Yeah. You know, I think we, you know, we can acknowledge, and there is a lot of evidence, you know, medical evidence that shows that that alcohol can have, particularly in excess, can have a detrimental effect on our mental health. But on the flip side of that, and that people have if you listen to the podcast, lots of people talk about actually that relationship, and there's a couple of people at least on the podcast who are either completely sober or are moderating. So the stories from all different angles, but conversely to that, I think there's also people on the podcast who are particularly talking about pubs as places of support and places where they feel looked after. And there's a lot of research to back that up as well. So I think in around 2016, CAMRA, the Campaign for Real Ale in the UK, did some research alongside the University of Oxford around pubs and around the benefits that they can have. And people who socialise in pubs Pubs are these kind of safe places, I suppose, to socialise in. And those people who claim to have a local pub that they go to, tended to be in this research that was done more satisfied with their life, more embedded in their local community, and had more of a sense of community. And that kind of came out in with a lot of the people that I talked to on the podcast, that, you know, they would talk about sort of maybe some quite, you know, very troublesome, very difficult times that they'd had in terms of their mental health. But then also talk about on the flip side, one of the things that's helped me the most is meeting my mate down the pub and having a pint with him and talking about it. And in fact, there's one guest, I don't think that episode has gone out yet, Greg Bateman, who is a rugby union player in the UK, and he set up a brewery called People's Captain. And he set that up purely because he was struggling a lot with his mental health, and he didn't tell anybody. He was in a very dark place until his mate took him out for a pint, and over a pint drew this kind of problems out of him, and then he was then able to reach out for help. And his idea is that, you know, perhaps this is a really good place of connection for a lot of people, if that sharing of a drink in an environment where it feels safe to do so. You're not in somebody's house, you're not in your own house, and you can share this kind of share whatever's going on for you in a supportive way. And there's also people on the podcast who've talked about beer in itself. I suppose the love of beer, like any sort of hobby or interest we might have, can also bring people together and find friendships. And on the first episode, I have a guest who talks about moving to a new city, not knowing anybody, but engaging with people on beer Instagram and finding her little bunch of friends, meeting up with them in real life at a brewery tap room, and finding that her mental health, her loneliness, her depression dissipated. So it's complex, I think. I think it's complex. But I think there isn't sort of a clear sort of this is good or this is bad. I think it's not a grey. I don't think grey area is the right word, because grey area seems to imply that we should have either black or white. I think things are a lot more complex than they seem. And sometimes that's okay that things are complex, but maybe we should notice that they are.
Well, and frankly, I'm constantly annoyed when I read or hear about some new report saying that, you know, alcohol is bad for you. There's no nutritional value. There's no this. And I want to grab the writer of that article and say, we know already, but you're missing a huge part of this. Yeah. You're taking that completely out of context and looking at just what the beer adds to our body. And that's complex in and of itself. There's alcohol, which does us no favors. And then there's B12 vitamins, which does, it's like there's plenty there, but like you're talking about, but if we think of not as beer's nutrition, but beer's a tool. Mm-hmm. And I think about the times I've spent with my buddies where we would celebrate over a beer, we would commiserate over a beer. And as I like to phrase it, we exercise some of our dark demons together over a beer. Yeah. And so there's that, like you just mentioned, one of the things that I teach when I have classes or have a chance to talk to people is having gone through Cicerone training and BJCP training and judging like you do, I think about, another way that we could look at this is from the human performance standpoint. How can I train my palate and my senses like a well-trained athlete to perform better? And when you open up that world, you don't just notice flavor. You start looking around the rest of the world and think, wait a minute, I'm hearing something in that song I didn't hear before, because I'm starting to pay attention in ways I didn't before. Mm-hmm. I'm starting to notice the way that tree looks on the side of the road like I didn't notice before. And just by training our palate, by increasing that performance, there's a collateral benefit along that side too. And so I think there are a lot of benefits to learning to drink well. But if you ask my wife, well, I could probably shed a few pounds, and but there is that complex overlap, like you just talked about.
Yeah, definitely. I think it is complex. It's individual for different people. And I think what I wanted to do with the podcast was just to shine a light on it, really. I found myself quite uniquely placed at a particular time. I had these two sort of professional careers, and I could bring those together to create something that highlighted these issues. That sometimes is a difficult listen because people are telling very personal stories, give something back to the listener as well, in terms of hopefully there's some hope in there. Hopefully there's still some element of joy of the beer that we love. It's not disregarding that, and also some information in there. And it's about, I think just noticing and picking apart and being allowed to notice and allowed the space to talk about those things that I think kind of just needed to happen. It's not a solution, but it's just, picking those apart a little bit. And recognizing, do we need more balance? There's lots of things we could do to extreme that would be bad for us. But there's lots of things that perhaps we ought to be doing a little bit more or a little bit less of that might help our well-being as we go through the world.
And I appreciate you saying that, because, it seems that, we look at alcohol as something. Some people just say alcohol's bad. Some people say, I love a little too much. But if we're objective and we pull ourselves completely out of that and look at that just purely as a tool, then we could compare that to fire. Fire can be outrageously damaging, but it also warms us and cooks our food. And we have learned to control that tool mostly for our benefit. We could look at a kitchen knife. That can cause some serious damage, and it can carve, at least in America, the Thanksgiving turkey. And so if we look at these tools, if we're completely honest, I could throw a baseball bat or a cricket bat in the same mix. That could really do some damage to someone's headlights and also score, or win the game. I think we need to be a little fair-minded and a little bit objective. And not just say beer is the cure for all evils, or it's the source of all evils.
Absolutely.
We need to look at this as a tool of how can we use this for our benefit, and then be very, very open-eyed about how we approach that. Would you agree with this?
Absolutely. I think those analogies you made are really good. I really like the fire one. I'm going to nick that from you, but I will credit you. But I think you're absolutely right. That kind of those learning how to, something that gives us so much pleasure, learning how to manage that is really important. And to kind of, just have some open and honest discussions about things. And of course, one thing that one way that I personally manage that for myself, I suppose, is alcohol-free beer, which I think has got so much better over the past fantastic. Even just handful of years. It's just amazing. I really enjoy alcohol-free beer, something that I never thought I would say. But I would quite happily, I'm thinking about my drinking. I know when my flash points are. When I finish work, put my tools down on my desk, I think, right, I want a beer. If I can go and grab an alcohol-free beer very easily, then that kind of sets me up. Right, okay, I've had alcohol free. Is that enough for me? Am I happy now? Right, I'll go home. Or am I actually going to go out and do some drink? Have a meet a friend, have a drink, have some, try some beers somewhere. Yeah. But it can give you like a little stopgap to kind of think about those things. I think that's really interesting. But I suppose the other thing that occurred to me when you were talking about those analogies as well. Yes, I hope the podcast does that, helps us to get a bit more of a balanced view. It helps people to think for themselves, their own balanced view, but also that it helps people to think, how's my buddy doing? Or how's my workmate doing? How's my family member doing? Are they managing their balance okay? Can I reach out to them? Do they need some help? Is there something more I could be saying or being open about or asking them that might help them? And, beer lovers, I've met, when you love beer, one of the joys about it is that you can turn up anywhere in the world and go to a place where other people love beer and strike up a conversation and have these wonderful conversations. And by the end of it, you're best buddies and you'll, you know, you'll be emailing and meeting up at various other events. And I think, you know, those sorts of conversations can be really powerful. And maybe we also need to be reaching out a little bit in those conversations to people. We're the kinds of people who like talking. Beer is a really convivial drink. We like coming together to drink together. Beer lovers like being around beer lovers, and maybe we can look after each other a little bit more as well.
That's perfect. I'm just going to take a little note of that because that was a perfect, beautiful little clip. Before we start closing out, one last little question I want to ask you on this, and I think this is a very important one. I need to tap my foot on this base using a baseball analogy. But for anyone who's listening, who loves their beer, we're all part of the beer brother and sisterhood, but they are dealing with some mental health challenges. They are dealing with their dark demons. Mm-hmm. What advice do you have for them?
So for anyone, and on the podcast, I always ask everyone who's shared their journey with me, ask them the same question. What advice would you give to somebody who's struggling now? And the answer is always the same: to reach out for help, to ask for help from somebody, to tell somebody, because however awful it feels, the idea of admitting that and telling somebody, it will feel a whole lot better in time. And everyone who I've spoken to has agreed that they are so glad that they did reach out and tell somebody. Now, whether that's a family member or a friend or a professional, if you're in a really dark place, please do ask for help. It's important. You're valued. You're not alone as well. There is help out there. In the UK, I say on every podcast, to look at the NHS website or to reach out to the Samaritans. There'll be equivalent things where you live in terms of what you should do. But if you don't feel you can keep yourself safe, that's an emergency. Please reach out to somebody.
Thank you for saying that. I kind of want to press this a little bit further, if you're willing, I'm going to kind of create a scenario. But, you know, let's say I'm a man sometimes in the worst way where I don't want to talk. I don't want to talk about it. Stiff mm-hmm. upper lip. I don't need help from anyone. I've watched too many James Bond movies, so I don't need anyone. What about those folks who have a hard time asking for help?
Yeah, I think it's particularly hard. And in fact, one of the episodes of the podcast, we concentrate particularly on men's mental health. In the UK, I don't know the statistics for the US, but in the UK, men are much more likely to die by their own hand than any other gender, and they're less likely to reach out for help. And that's probably due to a whole load of complex reasons. But yeah, that kind of, you know, typical kind of idea we have of what a man should be, or that a man might have of himself, of how he should be, I think plays into that a lot. And I think it's really hard. And, you know, the people that I've spoken to on the podcast, many of them are kind of, as I said, one of them was an ex rugby union player, which is, I guess, kind of equivalent to your American football kind of thing. He's a tough guy,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
He's a
very
tough
masculine
guy. Yeah. Very masculine. Worked in a very masculine pursuit. And he was in exactly that situation, you know, didn't feel he could reach out. And I think it is hard. And I think it's important that people do. And part of that is around stigma, I think. So it's not just up to the men themselves who are struggling. It's up to all of us, whatever gender we are, to kind of try and reduce that stigma a little bit about mental health, and maybe, you know, be more honest about the struggles that we've had ourselves, or be more willing to talk about those things, to kind of enable people to reach out. There's a great guy I spoke to on the podcast as well, a brewer from McColl's Brewery in the northeast of England, and they brew a beer called Let's Eat Pies and Talk About Men's Mental Health, and that's brewed in collaboration with a charity called Men's Pie Club, who just provide these weekly sessions where men rock up and they make pies together. And that's what they do. They make these pies and I guess eat them together as well. And there's no sort of expectation on them to share their inner feelings or whatever. They don't all sit around in a circle and share what's going on for them. But those making those sort of connections, I suppose. And that's one of the reasons, yeah, why pubs are so important. I think sometimes for men, and for all of us, actually, the way that we work nowadays, particularly post-COVID, hasn't necessarily helped us in terms of making social connections with each other. We tend to be much more on our own, working at home. Don't have that, you know, in the industrial age where the factories shut and everyone came out and they went straight to the pub and socialized together, even went on holidays together or whatever. I think it's trying to find those ways of connecting. And I think that that responsibility goes for all of us, really, reducing stigma and finding just finding some way to connect with people. It's not easy, but it will be worth it.
Absolutely agreed. And thank you for doing that work. I just think about, you know, in the world that I used to occupy, one of an athlete where you're supposed to be tough, or in another world I used to occupy in emergency services where you're supposed to have the answers. You're supposed to be the one who solves the problems, not the one who has the problems.
And
there are those demographics, those subcultures where it's not conducive to asking for help if you need it. And for those people, and my little PSA, for those people who are feeling tough and I don't need anyone's help, if you're tough enough to not need someone's help, then you're tough enough to ask for it. So for those who need it, please take care of this.
Absolutely.
So now we can depart from the necessary heaviness and have a little bit of fun. Because of your work and your service to the Crown and beer, you are tomorrow, you're going to be the royal liaison to the entire beer world for one day. what's one thing you would change about the world of beer?
So I can sort of pass any edict or, you know,
yes.
I've got a magic wand, right? You have
the power of the Crown behind you.
Oh, goodness. That's so difficult. Because I suppose part of me wants to say every beer must have some bitterness.
hey,
which fair. That's very selfish, because the other part of me, I suppose, wants to make all beer more inclusive for more people. And I think that would be what I would. I'd bite my lip about the business. I say, while you're at it, could you also make beer bitter? Thinking of all people, people of all genders, all sexualities, all races, we could be a bit more diverse, particularly in craft beer. And people could, I wish people felt more safe and more, wish there was, you know, not that they have to feel anything, but yeah, the industry would change, to be more accommodating, more accessible, more open, and to make a bit more bitter beer.
And so you could request a special ration, but if essentially one of the dreams I have is to sit around a big table with a dozen people that don't look like me. We all have a beer and we talk about everything and nothing and how interesting that would be.
Exactly.
And so I think you're putting that into work. So I salute you. At the end of your day, we're going to send you anywhere in the earth for a pint and a meal. Where would you go and what would you have?
Oh, God. Oh, yeah. That's a tough one. Pint and a meal. Now, I'm vegan. Although I do drink cask ale, which isn't always strictly vegan. And I do occasionally have lactose. So that's what's called a hypocrite. But in terms of
but
what
in the
I
best
eat.
Way possible.
In terms of what I eat, I eat vegan food. And the food that I love the most is kind of Greek and North African food. But that's not necessarily the beer culture I love the most. So that's a really tough one. And part of me also would just want to be somewhere with my loved ones and maybe in some, I don't know, some imaginary perfect pub on a cold night, but where it's really warm inside. And maybe I'm staying upstairs so I know I don't need to walk home in the cold. And there's a roaring log fire. And I've got a pint of just the best cask ale I have ever had. And in a minute, out of the blue, somebody's going to turn up with the most amazing tasting hummus.
You know,
which goes very well with cask ale.
I should have known that when I asked this question to a writer that we're going to get a story out of it. Some people just like answer, but you created a story. Thank you so much for that.
That's okay.
The next big question is, you spent a lot of time thinking about and experiencing beer, but why does it matter so much to you? Why does good beer matter so much to you?
I think it matters because of everything kind of thing, because of I love the way that beer speaks to us of place. I mean, you just mentioned that, I suppose, you know, there's so many stories about place around beer, and it can take us, also transport us to a place. And we talked right at the beginning about enjoying a certain beer in some places rather than others. You know, it's very contextual, but also how it links us to our history. So, you know, we can taste something that maybe our grandparents would have drunk, or people even many years ago would have drunk, or people way on the other side of the world who we'll never meet would have drunk or are drinking. It can link us across time and place, and that it, as I say, it's this really convivial drink. It's something that it's not the sort of and maybe I only get this, but that kind of massive flush of red wine on your face, or it's not the sleepiness of a whiskey, both drinks that I love, but it's neither of those. It's the kind of, and I think you even used this phrase earlier, that kind of arm around your shoulder. It's a kind of a, you know, let's sit for a while together and drink this drink that is going to, in many ways, make us feel quite nice, but is also going to, you know, it's going to allow us to have this open conversation with each other. And to talk, and for all those reasons, and the fact that pretty much everywhere in the world people drink beer, I think it's an amazing drink that brings us together as a human race, and anything that can do that is incredible by my mind, particularly, as you say, in the current situation we find ourselves in the world.
Yes, we need a bigger table and more beer.
We do.
And then maybe we can get somewhere. Yeah. For anyone who wants to find you or listen to your podcast, where can they go?
Mm-hmm. So you can find me on Twitter. I'm still hanging out on Twitter, or X, as we know.
you're the one.
I'm the one. Where is everybody? Where's everyone gone? So you can find me on there as Ferment Radio. I am also on Instagram. I'm trying my best with that. And I'm on that as Fermentation Radio. So Ferment Radio on Twitter, Fermentation Radio on Instagram. I also have a website, which is fermentationonline.com. And you can find the podcast. It's called Same Again? Subtitled A Podcast About Beer, Pubs and Mental Health. And you can find that on Spotify or Amazon, Apple Music, or Apple Podcasts, or any major podcast provider. If you're having trouble finding it, go to my website, fermentation.com, and there'll be links to find it there.
Yeah, and there will be links in the show notes in this podcast too as well. So,
excellent.
But Emma, it's absolutely wonderful to meet you, to have a talk with you. God forbid someday we have a beer together.
That would be wonderful.
But thank you for the work you're doing. Because I mean, there's a lot of us that are writing and podcasting about beer, and maybe too many of us. You know, I don't know. That's a different conversation for a different day. but the fact that you brought beer and mental health together to really address a very specific niche of people who need to hear what your guests have to say is just absolutely wonderfully imperfect. It's something that needs to be out there. So thank you for putting it out in the world.
Thank you for coming on to
the podcast to tell us all about
it. Thank you for having me. You've been a lovely interviewer.
You say the sweetest things. Thanks.
I know.
If we're sick, we go see a doctor. If we're injured, a physical therapist. When we want to perform better, we see a coach. Addressing our mental health and our mental fitness ought to be the same. Good beer may have little to do with this, but it's a great way to get the conversation started. In the next episode, we visit an old friend leading the new wave of non-alcoholic beer education who reminds us that good experiences are mandatory, but alcohol is optional. I'm nearing the end of my virtual tour of the craft and culture of beer around the globe. I've put Good Beer Matters on video so I can take you along for the ride.
I hope you've enjoyed your journey, and I'd love to hear which was your favorite. Meanwhile, grab a beer, hang out with friends, and let your world open up. Thank you for listening. Cheers.